Right, now we move sort of from the planning and the difficulties with planning through to more of the resourcing side of the picture. And the next couple of presentations are on that. The first one is from Dean Pemberton of Prophecy Networks. Dean is a senior consultant with Prophecy Networks. His role has got a very broad scope, ranging from ICT policy to development with CIOs of infrastructure deployment. Dean has regularly worked with Internet New Zealand and is currently chair of the IPv6 steering group, technical special interest group, and that's probably something that's very, very important to me as chairman of the steering group, to have the support of a wide range of people that can provide technical support for anything that we do around IPv6. Dean has worked previously for Juniper Networks, Lucent Technologies, in consulting and training roles. And so I welcome Dean to the podium, and Dean's going to cover quite a few things, and he will finish off with some of the resources available through the TechSig. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Awesome. I'm going to try and stay to time today, so I'm going to start myself, and there'll be an alarm that goes off eventually. One thing that I want to cover just before I cover my presentation, hopefully we've got it in here. No, we haven't. Campbell, did those Google slides make it in? Cheers. I'll do it at the end. My presentation first then.
Okay,
going backwards. Awesome. Well, one of the things that we covered in Christchurch on the first day was a presentation by Saki-san in Japan. And part of his presentation was a really good visual example of why carrier-grade NATs will not work and will not scale. So I just wanted to represent that now, because it's a great visual example as to why even the idea of those carrier-grade NATs are just not going to work. Quick overview. So for each V4 IP address out there, you've got 65,000 ports that you can use. They have to be shared by customers. And the minute you start doing that, what you're trying to do is take that one IPv4 address at the front, hide a lot of customers behind that, get them to share it. So they're in a sense going to be sharing that 65,000 addresses. You wouldn't buy one of these boxes if it was one customer at the back to one IP address at the front. The whole point of this is to oversubscribe those addresses. And you're looking at a conservative number of about 2,000 backend customers per IP address at the front, if this is worth doing at all. So with that, you're only giving each customer about 30 sessions. Now, if that was just one session for email, one session for web, one session for Skype and all that, that might work out okay. But we are gone with those days of that being how the applications on the average desktop work. And we've got an example here just using Google Maps. Everyone will have seen something like this before. Maybe you weren't looking for San Francisco Airport, but very, very similar. Now, if we give the users 30 connections each, it looks like this. It looks fine. We reduce that to 20 connections, see what's happened. I'll flick it back and forward a bit. One of the tiles didn't come up. Now, why is that? It's because the AJAX that's implementing this doesn't just go away and grab each of these serially. It starts up about 30 connections, zips off to the Google server, grabs all of those tiles back all at once and puts them up on the screen. Anyone ever wonder why this works so well? It's because it's doing everything in parallel. But down this to 15, it's starting to become a little... These aren't just waiting to load. These are not going to load. 10 and 5. Yours may not have hit. I've hit a gunner on the screen. Read it for your letter if you like. But yeah, it's
basically says tough luck.
Yeah, the beta says I've knocked enough IPs. So yeah, that's a very, very visual example of what you can expect if you start reducing the amount of IP connections that your customers can have. Now, here we were talking about 30 for Google Maps. This is a very visual example. Tony was saying before that iTunes, for example, 350 parallel connections. And remember, you don't get to control this in your customer's environment. These are applications that are going to be out there. So 350 parallel connections, and it's not immediately obvious that there's stuff going wrong. Sometimes album covers just don't turn up. Sometimes you've got to go through two or three pages and, oh, hang on, that doesn't look quite right. At least you know that this is broken. Your customers aren't going to immediately know that what exactly is breaking in other environments, but you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to be calling you guys on the phone. So carrier grade NATs, yeah, what are we?
Try and diagnose that issue.
Pardon?
Try and diagnose that issue.
Yeah, exactly, good luck with that, because everything's hidden behind the NAT. The minute you've got the NAT, you've got to keep that state table of, okay, so who was that customer that almost had the and didn't really have the, and yeah. So this is maybe why Google has turned on V6, because they can see these problems coming.
So what will you see on the CPU device? How much timeouts
get there? Yeah, you'll see a whole lot of connections which never got connected.
So an office LAN that had five people searching Google Maps at the same time and behind one IP address.
That's right. Yeah. An office LAN where everyone's turning on their iPhones and trying to sync with their iTunes, and oh my god. You're lucky if you could get away with one IP address. Right, sorry. My presentation. Start. Okay, what am I doing? I'm not trying to preach to Buddha, so I'm not coming out here to tell you all how to design networks. Designing networks is a very well-understood process. What I am going to do here is just try and go through some of the new questions to ask yourself during that process. When you're trying to get V6 integrated into the way that you roll out IT projects. So I'd like you all to think about where you are in your current refresh or design cycle. Are you yet to start a new project? Have you already just started one? Is it just about time for a network refresh? You've got a network, you put it in a little while ago, the wheels are starting to creak and maybe wobble a bit, so it's about time to get that next one out there. Regardless of where you are in the project cycle, I want to say it's not too late to start thinking about V6. If you're halfway down, just about to implement, still think about V6. But from now on, it is going to be too late to start thinking about it. If your network refresh cycle is 3 to 5 years and you've just put in a network and you're thinking that you're going to get 3 to 5 years out of it, just be aware that you're going to be smack bang in the middle of IPv4 depletion. Maybe that means nothing. Maybe it is going to have an impact. I'm going to leave it up to you guys. It may even be that V6 provides added benefits. We've heard that there are a lot of benefits, and maybe the project that you're trying to implement can make use of some of them. So I'm going to go through a lot of the areas to do with the rolling out projects. I'm going to present them one at a time, but this isn't a project plan. For instance, you can't leave training right till the end. We've heard time and time again during this hui, and believe me, in the two that preceded it, you have to do training all the way along. You can't just get a new support system right at the end. You have to plan for it and think about it. So these are just slides, not a Gantt chart. Think about these things as you go along. We always start with requirements. Does your business have any specific V6 requirements? Do these new features that V6 gives you enable your business to realize new potential? Being able to talk to customers end to end without having to go through NATs or aggregation points, does that allow you to deliver new features? Is IPv6 at odds with your existing requirements? Does your business have existing requirements which don't fit with V6? If they do, you're going to have to make a decision. Do the requirements stay, or do they change? Again, that's up to you, but it's a question that you need to ask. Are adoption requirements placed upon you by stakeholders, by clients? Okay, stakeholders, American Defense Department, got told, you will do this. Clients, if your client is the US Defense Department, you will do this. Right? If not now, then are they about to be? Remember, these can be internal clients too. We've heard today, LTE handsets, V6 only. I have seen so many IT departments shudder in fear the minute their CIO or CEO turns it with a new mobile device that he's bought, and now they have to support it. It happened with BlackBerries, it happened with iPhones, it's going to happen with LTE. And it'll be one morning, the worst morning you're ever having, your CEO will turn up and go, this needs to work. It works at home. It works for my friend down the road. I just came back from that trip up at we all know we've all been there. So once you've worked out the requirements, the next thing is the policies. So policies are all about statements and business positioning. What new policies or what changes to existing policies are you going to need to put in place when you're starting to think about V6? Statements like, the business will deploy IPv6 alongside IPv4 before fiscal 2011. Boom, stake in the ground. Let's say that and work to it. Maybe that's appropriate for some organisations. Maybe that's a little bit too advanced. Water it down as you need to, but think about saying some policies. Maybe you want to say, the business will not purchase equipment for which there is not an IPv6 roadmap. We've heard today as well that the CapEx cost of doing a truck roll on your entire network infrastructure is going to mean that this never gets done. But the incremental cost of doing it during refreshes and just making sure that the V6 boxes ticked in the requirements can be relatively low. We've heard, 1% of IT spend because the requirements were in there and the refresh was happening anyway. So having that as a policy could probably provide some significant benefits. Again, it gets you on that very slow ramp-up graph rather than the big cliff graph. The business will not engage in any contracts with service providers who do not supply an IPv6 service. I couldn't have said that even so much as 6 months ago, but now it wouldn't be a bad policy to have. There are going to be choices. We heard Mark talk about where telecom is. We heard the FX guys talk about where FX is. The other telcos and ISPs are not going to be far behind. The business will have an IPv6 adoption plan before fiscal 3 2010. A plan. You don't need to actually, commit to anything, but having a plan. Go out, have a look at your organisation, have a look at auditing your existing kit, finding out whether it supports V6 or not. Richard showed us some pretty scary numbers early on in that survey, showing that a lot of staff didn't actually know whether their existing installed base was going to be V6 capable. At least finding that out and having a plan would be a good start. Architecture. Train your architects. Make sure that your architects are thinking in that V6 space. So IPv6 gives some new features. Can you make use of them in your business? You can now see your clients directly, no NAT. What does that allow you to do? They can see you directly, no private addressing. Oh, crap, what does that allow them to do? Okay. Does this change how you want to deliver or access business-critical applications? We've seen Microsoft tell us you can now get things which allow you to direct connect in. It has architectural implications. You should be thinking about them. Don't forget things like billing, monitoring, and provisioning. It sweeps across all architectural levels, not just if I'm changing routers and switches. High-level design. You've probably now got two networks to build, or at least one and a half. Leverage as much as possible from each other so that they're similar and you haven't got twice as much work to do. There are companies out there who are just refreshing their IPv4 network. They're not quite ready to go to V6 yet, but they're refreshing V4 with V6 in mind. So they're redoing their subnetting, they're redoing their routers so that it looks very much like how they want their V6 network to look like. When they are ready, when they do have that confidence, when they do have the staff training, it's going to make it a lot easier for them to be able to implement V6. Work with people who have done this before to avoid their pitfalls. Work with people who have failed doing this before. Okay? There's a lot of talk on the technical lists about Should you use /112s for link nets? Should there be /64s? Blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of different ways to think about this, and, you know, work with other people's mistakes, and it'll save you making your own. When you're working through detailed designs, as much as possible, try and be IP version agnostic. Everything you do with V4, you should allow for or explicitly make out of scope with V6. Don't just ignore it. If you're doing something with V4, think actively about, do I need to do this with V6? Nope, I don't think I do. Awesome. This is out of scope. Don't just let it hang. Make those decisions. You're going to start to need dual firewall rule sets. Okay? There's no NAT anymore. There's no private addressing. I'm not getting, you know, security through NAT. If anyone thinks that they're getting security through NAT, speak to Tony, you're not. Dual network addressing schemes. Maybe they look very similar. Maybe they look different. There's good ways of doing addressing and pitfalls. Some of us, our V4 addressing has grown organically, and it may not be the most sensible way to do it if we had a Greenfields network. V6 is a good opportunity to redo some of that. Maybe you've even got dual routing policy. See how important leveraging was? If we can make these things look the same, we're not managing and doing two networks, because, you know, all of your at least newer staff have forgotten what that looks like. None of them worked with Token Ring, none of them worked with SNA, none of them worked with S25. Implementation. I swear I had this on my slide before I heard everyone else have it on theirs. Wasn't my fault, I got the late slot. Training, 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 experience, experience, experience. Testing, testing, testing as well. A lot of the features you expect just to be there because it's IP will not be there, and if they are there, they won't work. I've rolled out some equipment, and the V6 equivalent of ARP didn't work. But the person swore that V6 was implemented and worked just fine. What they meant was you can put an address with letters and colons in it on an interface. Well, that doesn't quite cut it when you actually want to use it. So a lot of the things you expect to be there and supported because it's IP, they'll work fine in V4, but people may not have tested them quite as robustly in V6. So make sure you've got those regression tests. Make sure you know what tests your organization needs to run through in order for a device to be acceptable. Run through them on V4 and V6. Ensure that your engineering team have plenty of time to get to grips with V6. Treat them, you know, treat them nice. They are going to be scared. A lot of organizations I go into, the CIOs have been told time and again, we don't even need to think about V6 at all. We don't need more addresses. Now, we've just heard that it's not about that. It's about you wanting to talk to people who felt they did need to do it. It's not always about you. And so a lot of your internal staff are saying, we don't need to do it, we don't need to do it, because they're feeling that their skill set is eroding. Now, we can just try and deal with that. Give them time to get to grips with it. Give them time and give them the training so that they can give you the right answers to those questions. It's really just the same as V4 to administer. People are going to start, you know, stabbing me because all of their slides said that it was majorly different. There are differences, but when it comes down to it, the FX guys have the right idea. It's just a network. V4 or V6, it's about the same to administer at the end of the day, but your team needs to convince themselves of that. It's like the Matrix. No one can be told about it. They have to kind of dive in and convince themselves that it's just the same. People fear what they don't know, so give them that time. Support and maintenance. Really what this boils down to is your staff need to be as good at troubleshooting and supporting V6 as V4. A lot of the tools are the same. A lot of them have minor differences. Some of them don't support V6 at all. So just make sure that you've thought about these things. Who can help you? Well, probably the best place to start is, as Murray mentioned before, the IPv6 steering group has a technical special interest group known as the TechSoup. here's the mailing list for it here. Don't go writing down these slides will be up somewhere. Or just what is Google for New Zealand IPv6 tech suite? That's up there. We've really tried to get all of the engineers in the country and a lot of them out of the country together on this list to start discussing some of the more technical issues. Technical issues come up all the time. You know, what's my residential gateway going to be? What I've got these two tunneling or translation mechanisms, which is the best? How do I put these things on my routers? How did you do this? And everyone's helping each other. It's a really good place to go on and start asking those technical questions and start to get your technical staff comfortable with what's going on. It's a very friendly environment. No one's got big egos. If anyone goes on there and gets hassled, tell me, I'll make it stop. Believe me, it'll stop. It's a really good place to go. There are also plenty of other organisations providing IPv6 design resources. We've heard from Mark. Juno's doing a good job. I've tried to document a lot of them on the design resources page on the wiki. Again, the TechSig was used to populate that. There's a list of what they were last week on your handout pack. I know that that's grown since then. When we gave this in Christchurch in Auckland, after that, people rushed on and said, hey, I'm doing some of that stuff. So there are plenty of people around that can help. Most of you will already have a relationship with consultants or something. Go to them first. They are going to need to know about it eventually. If they don't know about it now, maybe this is an opportunity for them to upskill as well. So there are plenty of people around. Here's the list of what it was when I made the slides, organisations, and the names associated with those organisations. Because sometimes you ring up your account manager and they don't know. You know, you can ring up, I'm not going to choose anyone, and say, oh, I need to speak to someone about V6. They won't know. Names. So at least you've got someone to speak to. No warranty expression applied. Thank you. 1 minute to go. Awesome.
Before you disappear completely, is there any question for Dean?
Just a... What are you talking from your experience? Because training, it's pretty much ends of human resources.
Yep.
Or technical, where a lot of engineers. Or it's strategic, well, C-level.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone is aware, but the real champion in your experience, who has been leading? I know it depends on the size of the organization, but
yeah, it does, and
it's a management question,
and it depends on what their needs are. You guys should all be asking at the end, what is the driver for me? Now, maybe there is one today, maybe there's not one today, but it very much depends on what the drivers are as to who is driving it. A lot of it is the internal tech resource wanting to upskill themselves and wanting to get experience with this before the CEO turns up with device du jour. Okay, a bit of it is the management having the foresight to go, now I want to go and sell stuff to China or to the US Defense Department, and they've made this a requirement. In the case of NZRS, it was, you know, one of the things that Andrew was talking about. So it does come from different places. And the thing that makes this look so much different to Y2K is there's not one date and there's not one reason. There's kind of a date depending on which calculator you use, but the wheels aren't going to fall off the internet bang on that date. They're going to impact different people at different times in different ways. And so you guys know your business the best. You'll be the best people to understand when it's going to impact you. We're just here to kind of help you if and when it does.
Organizations I've seen where it's been driven by the engineers, it will be driven and rolled out
needing either licenses for devices or new devices or start needing to impact the customers and all that, they are too hard, no buy-in stock. So a lot of places have their core network all done, and the edge network kind of done, and their billing system not done at all because, cool, we don't want to touch that. So it does need buy-in from all of the levels. When it's led by the tech, you get it so far. The minute they have to start asking for money or impacting customers and all that, it stops. So it must be across all those levels.
Thanks very much indeed, Dean.